Time now for Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It's a Swedish Johnson morning this morning on Minnesota Reads. Patrice Johnson joins us this morning, and she's the author of a book called Yule, Swedish American Holiday Traditions. Hey, Patrice, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good to have you on the line with us this morning. Now, if a book has recipes in it, it's maybe going to get categorized as a cookbook. Are you comfortable with that definition of your book, or do you think it's a little bit more than that?
I am comfortable with that definition because I've come across so many other readers who, like me, read cookbooks as if they are novels. And when a cookbook also includes stories, to me, it comes full circle because that's what recipes are about. They tell stories.
Many of those cookbook novels that you refer to, the stories are crushingly dull. Crushingly dull. The cast of characters, if there's too many characters, there's a lot of numbers involved. It's hard to keep track, and frequently they do weird things that you don't really understand. And I don't know, that whole metaphor thing kind of falls apart for me, but that's perhaps just me.
I need to send you a list, maybe.
Maybe so. You didn't come to Scandinavian cooking the way one would perhaps expect that you came to Scandinavian cooking. Growing up, you know, kind of maybe the way that a lot of singers talk about coming to singing. They started in church, and they sang in the church choir, and that's where they really developed their voice. And a lot of Scandinavian cooks come, you know, grow up cooking in the church basements. And this is
where
the lore tells us our great Scandinavian cooks come from. But you took a different path. Tell us about that.
Well, that is true. I always say I have Lutheran envy because I never met one of those church basement ladies. And I've always wanted to have one invite me into that kitchen. But it has not happened. I was raised Catholic in a home where the kids were not invited into the kitchen. So I came along into the kitchen probably around college, and I started exploring my Swedish heritage a little bit later and never looked back. I call it the epiphany moment, the first time I ever ate at Aquavit restaurant in Minneapolis with Chef Marcus Samuelson. And it really, it spoke to my soul, and it's spoke to the writer in me as well. And I always say I speak and I teach about cooking so that I can support my writing habit.
Let me ask you a little bit about that epiphany moment, because it could have come to you in so many different ways. Wow, this is the best food I've ever eaten. I need to learn to cook better so I can cook food like this. Wow, I'm connected to my heritage. There are lots of different kinds of ways that having a fabulous meal like that could create that epiphany. Have you tried to parse it a little bit and take it apart and figure out what it was exactly that created this turning point for you at that point in your life?
Absolutely. I believe that it's because I was raised with this misconception that the stuff we ate on Christmas Eve was the end-all be-all of what Scandinavian food was. I had no clue that food is this culture, and it changes according to all sorts of influences. And I was sort of trapped in this little Minnesota Swedish girl kind of thinking that all food in Sweden was white, which could not be further from the truth. And so when I realized...
Don't tell people that. When I put whipped cream on krumkaka, I tell people that that's because Swedes like white food.
White is an important color,
okay.
Nordic food in general is really a balance of color and texture and flavor. And you can see that in the beauty of a meatball paired with a cucumber salad and lingonberry. There's all the beautiful colors and textures and flavors in just that trio.
As you began to experiment with contemporary Nordic food, did you discover that it was, how did people react around you? Minnesotans' Scandinavian food, a lot of it is very, very heavily traditional. Yeah. And it comes from, like you say, we always eat this on Christmas. And when you take the food out of that emotional context, or you try something that isn't, my mom made this or my grandma made this, how did people react?
I think it depends on the people. And we really do have our own unique cuisine here. In when you talk about Minnesota Swedes or Minnesota Norwegians, our cuisine that we consider to be part of our heritage is unique to this place and unique to a time 120, 100 years ago. And that makes it really special. But when you want to kind of update the palate, maybe make some, like, make lutefisk palatable to younger folks, that's when it's really, I think, important and kind of clever to bring in some new flavors and new ideas. And for the most part, when I update recipes, they're met with pleasure, I hope.
Let me ask you a couple of questions about lutefisk. We have B.O. Jakangas on our show, you know, fairly regularly, of course, and she is the one who heads up the big church feed of lutefisk.
I've been to her lutefisk. It's wonderful.
And everybody, you know, every TV station sends the newest reporter, and that reporter has to eat it. Some poor person who's never had it before and doesn't, you know, isn't from here. First of all, I don't know. I know a lot of people, Scandinavian folk, who eat it or who say it was served every Christmas, but they don't like it. So what's the point of a holiday tradition where you serve something that people don't like?
To me, the point is community. Nobody will go with me to the lutefisk feeds around here, so I have to go alone. But that means I'm able to talk to people I've never met before about their traditions and their stories, and it's wonderful. It's a communion, and I actually enjoy it because I've had it prepared correctly. If you have it prepared wrong, you're never going to like it.
Well, and
you think
how
of it as
can,
a gelatinous stuff.
How can you go wrong with fish and lye? Okay, this is one of those recipe novels where you've only got two characters. No,
well,
three. Fish,
butter,
lye,
and
butter. Okay.
And allspice and mustard beg to differ.
Okay, all right.
They want to be part of the plate too.
This is such a learning experience. This is a good thing. So if you're going, the first thing you need to do if you're going to update lutefisk for younger folk is you need to make sure you serve it to them with nobody else around so that they're not, you know, it's like you don't want to have a baby if you've been listening to other people telling you about having babies, and you
that
don't want to
point.
Eat lutefisk if you're listening to other people telling you about their experience with it. So how do you update something like that? Inquiring minds want to know.
It may be as simple as serving it with crispy bacon and lots of allspice, and also make sure you cook it correctly so it's not gelatinous. Or it could be even more decadent and make it into a brandade. Cook it and then flake it up and add some mashed potatoes and put a breading on that and deep fry it. It's lovely. It's wonderful. And add some lingonberries.
And there's a bunch of people going, bacon? Bacon?
Yeah.
Bacon's become the new black or something. Apparently, it goes with everything. One of my earliest experiences with Scandinavian cooking was the idea that you just put whole cream on everything, including
that's not a bad route.
Including cake, including mashed potatoes, and the ancestral Johnson comfort food, macaroni.
That's right. lots of cream and a little bit of cheese.
No, you don't put cheese in. Then you have macaroni and cheese, which
That's
is
correct.
Another story. You added macaroni and cheese to your family's or your family's holiday fare. It began to include macaroni and cheese, and apparently there's a lot of lore surrounding that, and the lore is a lot of the fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when I first started studying, that was for my master's thesis, my advisor said, you need to find a question that only you can answer.
Okay, you didn't do your master's thesis on macaroni and cheese.
I did, absolutely. I did it on Swedish food traditions in Minnesota, and that included my family's Swedish food tradition of macaroni and cheese on Christmas Eve. It's on our Yule board, along with the meatballs, along with the salmon, along with the potatoes.
And so what did you discover as you did your deep dive into this for your, and I'm just thinking, wow, okay, master thesis, wow, okay, so what did you discover?
I just discovered that there were a couple different narratives, and that I love them all so much that I'm keeping them all because nobody can tell me that any of them are wrong. The first one was the possibility that macaroni and cheese was added to our Yule board when my Grandpa Johnson married my Catholic Grandma Louise, and my great-grandmother possibly added the macaroni and cheese to the table to welcome her new daughter-in-law, who in 1932, Catholics didn't eat meat on Christmas Eve, and so the idea was possibly she added the macaroni and cheese to the table so that my grandmother Louise would have something to eat besides the lutefisk.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's back when what we now call political correctness was called courtesy.
Exactly.
I like that. Okay.
And welcoming a new person to your table.
Right, right. Thoughtfulness.
Exactly.
What a concept. Okay.
Another narrative was my great auntie was the final sibling who was still alive when I was asking these questions, and she thought that her mother added the macaroni and cheese to the table to show her favorite stepson that he was her child, and she loved him just as much as if she had given birth to him.
Oh,
another great
so
narrative.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah.
What a nice family. Nobody put the macaroni and cheese on the table because they knew somebody hated it and they'd have to eat it.
Well,
what an amazingly functional family. How
right.
do you cope?
We eat a lot of more macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, I like it.
But as I was writing my thesis, though, a classmate of mine who came from a Southern Black tradition suggested that because macaroni and cheese is one of the very few American foods that crosses regions, most of American food is considered to be regionally based, like anything from a pasty from the UP or up north or Cincinnati chili or your whole California cuisine. It's all very regionally based. But macaroni and cheese is one of the very few American foods that crosses regions. And so my classmate suggested that perhaps my great-grandmother put the macaroni and cheese on the table to show that not only were we Swedes eating Swedish food at Christmas Eve, but we were also Americans. And I like that narrative as well.
Well,
I think all three are fantastic.
Even when my dad was growing up in the 20s, there was a lot of conversation about being American, and to be Norwegian or to be Swedish or whatever was not always really a good thing. You wanted to blend in. You wanted
Absolutely.
To be American
yep.
and kind of lose that specific ethnicity and become American. So what a different mm-hmm. time that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patrice, thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Thank
what
you.
A delight to have a conversation with you. And look for an email. I'm going to hook you up with a Lutheran church basement lady.
That would be lovely.
And
thank
you are going to be a nice Swedish lady. You're going to be good to go, okay?
Thank you so much.
Patrice Johnson, our guest this morning, the author of a book called Yule, Swedish American Holiday Traditions. Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.